Thank you, Dahi. Mr. Foster, Vice Chancellor, Professor Finnemore, MLAs, Dahi, ladies and gentlemen, it's good to be back here in Belfast again, and it's a particular pleasure on my part to be here in wonderful surrounds of Queen's University. As you all know, I recently spent some time here. James said, a week is a long time in politics. 10 weeks, it's a long time in politics. 10 weeks in Stormont House, it's a long time in politics. In fact, as Minister for Foreign Affairs and Trade, let me say that I've spent more time in Belfast over the last 3 months than I've spent in my own constituency. And when I announced that to my local media, I was accused of looking for narrow parochial preference in terms of my engagement. But I was particularly pleased to have been part of a recently successful process. And I want to begin by saying a brief few words about the recently agreed fresh start in Northern Ireland, because I think obviously there is a fundamental link and connection between governance here in Northern Ireland and the wider issue of the European Union. I believe the recently forged agreement does represent very much in terms of a fresh start. It has stabilised the institutions. It has made progress over a range of issues. And can I just express my disappointment and regret that the agreement didn't include a new set of proposals in the form of a solution for dealing with the very sensitive and important issue of the legacy of the past. And I wish to share the deep disappointment of the victims and survivors of the Troubles, of whom there are many, and indeed their families, their friends, and their communities. I want to reassure them that during this course of period of reflection on the part of both the British government and the Irish government, we will nevertheless work hard and engage to take issues forward so that ultimately we can deal with this matter in a satisfactory way. You know that getting the fresh start over the line wasn't easy, required over 100 meetings, so 100 plus hours of engagement, careful consultation, number of phone calls. But I think more than anything else, it entailed an element of directness and honesty on the part of all involved. I think at times it also tested the patience of the participants and indeed the commitment of the seven parties around the table. Could I acknowledge the role of the current Minister for Finance? And could I, on my own behalf and on behalf of my government colleagues, ask her to convey and extend to First Minister Peter Robinson an acknowledgement of his great contribution over a number of years to politics here in Northern Ireland and beyond, and to wish him every success and good health on his retirement. Looking back at the last 10 weeks, at no point do I recall anybody ever saying, all this process would be a whole lot easier if it wasn't for our membership of the European Union. Nobody asked the same question last year as we laboured at all-party talks up until the eve of Christmas Eve. And maybe the reason why we didn't cover that, or maybe the reason why it wasn't expressed by anybody around the table or even outside the door of the talks, is because we all know how important is the common British and Irish membership of the European Union and how important it has been over a range of issues. But let me just say how important it has been in the ongoing peace process. We all realise, irrespective of our party political allegiance, the key role that the European Union has played should not be taken for granted, or even worse, simply dismissed out of hand. And I believe that has been seen by many. And can I just say, from my own personal knowledge, days over the last few months, which have been preceded, days in Brussels at the Foreign Affairs Council, days which have been preceded by engagement here in Belfast, or when I had to leave Brussels to come back, I did bring with me the goodwill and good wishes of a range of European foreign ministers round the table, who, in spite of the many crises that they are grappling with and dealing with, always had very positive words to say about Northern Ireland, our peace process, the need for stability, and the need to assure and reassure the people of Northern Ireland of the help, assistance, influence and positivity of our European partners, our European colleagues. And I do believe that, you know, even though we don't proclaim it loudly as much as we should, the fact is, over the last 50 or more years, the European Union does deserve a great degree of credit for being a force for good for people on these islands, even more so, a force for good for the people all over the continent of Europe. And remember, the first and basic principle, the founding of the European Union, to bring people together to agree a set of principles against the background of the horrific tragedy that was at the Second World War. So I think if we start from the basic principle that the European Union is by definition very much a force for good, in the world. And here it has been a force that has had a most positive impact, not just in the peace process, but on our economies north and south in terms of our cooperation. A force that has provided opportunities for all our people, for our business, whether they are based in Portrush or Portlaoise. Of course, it's true to say that the Union oftentimes gives us some frustration by way of reaction. Of course, the institutions need improvement. This is an ongoing project, an ongoing process. The institutions can always be improved. I think that's true for politics at any level. Not only can they be improved, but I think in the case of the European Union, perhaps, they must be improved. And our government certainly feels there is room for improvement. We've been quite clear about this. And that's why we stand ready to support the efforts on the part of Prime Minister Cameron aimed at making the EU function more effectively, helping it to better deliver growth and jobs for all its 500 million citizens. But we approach the process from a starting point that continuing membership of the European Union is beyond doubt in the interests of everybody on these islands. I'm convinced about that. The government colleagues are convinced about that. We certainly think that membership of the European Union has been good for Northern Ireland, for the totality of relationships in the United Kingdom and Ireland, be they north, south, east, west. So it's important, in my view, that we recognise and fully understand why this has been the case, not just for its own sake, but because by doing so, we also throw into sharper relief what the implication of a British exit from the Union might do for Northern Ireland. The debate is only beginning, and I welcome the invitation this morning for the wider community to engage in what is a really important debate. And I don't say this is anyway a point of criticism, but I do find it remarkable that debate here has not been perhaps as engaged as it might have been, and certainly not as I know it will be over the next few months. I believe that it's important that there be full and detailed debate, not only here within Northern Ireland, but across the island, and what it means in terms of primarily north-south relations. That's why this event is not only timely, but indeed welcome. And I want to thank all those responsible for this engagement. But no matter which way the people decide to vote here in the referendum, I believe it's absolutely essential, and I say this as a practicing parliamentarian of many years standing, I believe it's important that people come to that decision-making on the clearest possible understanding of all the facts in the debate. And indeed, as I know from campaigning in up to 10 EU referendums over the past 25 years, we need to ensure that we have an active civil society and that there is political engagement and political leadership, which is vital to ensure maximum voter participation. So I look forward to Minister Foster's contribution this afternoon. I want to recognise as well the efforts that others across Northern Ireland are making to what must be described as a collective understanding of the issues involved. I want to acknowledge the Centre for Democracy and Peacebuilding, launching an initiative to stimulate debate about the referendum and its impact here in Northern Ireland. Only last week, the Centre published a paper on this very subject, four of whose five authors are academics here at Queen's, including Professor Finnemore. Other valuable studies and events examining this area have also been undertaken, and there are more in the course of publication. So the implications of a Brexit for Northern Ireland are very much on our radar screens, and indeed so they should be, given what's at stake. The implications are wide-ranging. It's very difficult to quantify. I think we can look at it by way of the best-case scenario is uncertainty. I think the worst-case scenario is economic and social disadvantage of huge dimensions. I believe it's important that because assessing what Brexit means for Northern Ireland or the island as a whole, it's complex. Some studies already published make that very clear. A virtual endless list, a policy area spanning a range of government departments could be and indeed will be affected in a myriad of different ways. Almost all, in my view, for the worse and to the detriment of the people of Northern Ireland. But I want to just focus today on what I see as the dominant concern in connection with a possible Brexit for Ireland and Northern Ireland and for the relationship of people on this island. And that concern, from our point of view, characterises every aspect of the debate. And that is what I said. The best case scenario is a huge degree of uncertainty. Because no matter what way you look at it, a Brexit would be a leap over the cliff into the unknown. No matter how much planning and mitigating and negotiating we will, of course, do, if the United Kingdom does decide to leave the European Union, we simply don't know yet how much it might mean for the border, for North-South cooperation, or for the economy of our island. And that's just uncertainty from a relatively all-of-Ireland perspective. There is huge uncertainty, too, surrounding a whole host of other things, whether it's the economic impact it will have on the entire European Union, the strategic balance within the Union, or the engagement of the European Union across the wider world. So from an Irish and Island of Ireland perspective, I see very little to be gained by jumping over the cliff into uncertainty. I believe it's important that we are now in the business of solutions, and I acknowledge public commentary that Ireland has made in that regard. Over those solutions that we're now seeking, we must include being committed to supporting a sensible British reform of the European Union. We are firmly behind the initiative, for example, to strengthen the Union's competitiveness through more sensible regulation, a reduction in red tape. We see it on a daily basis and on the matter of engagement of our constituents through business and trade and also in the area of agriculture in particular, Arlene and I sharing, as we do, some common ground in representing a predominantly rural constituency base. But I believe that some of the issues being put forward by Prime Minister Cameron would help make the European Union and its collective economy stronger and better, which is the goal that everyone should share. But they will also hopefully provide Prime Minister Cameron with a basis upon which he can secure the backing of a majority of British people for the continued membership of the European Union. I had the occasion on Monday evening to meet with Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond. I assured him as I assure people now, that Ireland will be supportive. We will be as supportive as we can in the negotiations that lie ahead. I also discussed with him, as I have indeed on previous occasions, the importance of the Northern Ireland dimension. And I believe it's critically important from a Westminster point of view that the Northern Ireland dimension is carefully and fully considered. Of course, the EU-UK relationship also features very significantly in every conversation that takes place between Prime Minister Cameron and Taoiseach Kenny. But I would say to everybody with a stake in this debate that it's both fair and right to now put some hard questions that I was making the case for the UK leaving the European Union. And the first big question surrounds what would happen to the border between North and South. After all, those who advocate most strongly for a British exit from the European Union say that it's needed in order for the UK to take back control of its borders. And that will have pretty stark consequences for the border North and South. And this is a matter of great concern to me. And I know it's a matter of concern to people in this room. The implications for the UK's only land border, which runs for almost 500 kilometres across Northern Ireland from the Foyle to Carlingford Lough. Ever since the Anglo-Irish Agreement of 30 years ago, we've all been committed to making that border less of an impediment for everybody on this island, whether they're commuters, business people or tourists. It's to all our advantage that the distance between Belfast and Dublin is now less than 2 hours, and that has huge benefits. If, for example, we are to complete, as we agreed in the recent agreement, Fresh Start, working on the A5 route, for example, between Derry and the border, giving access to Dublin. The Irish government committed a finance in excess of €75 million. That road will be completed at the earliest opportunity. It'll take some time. But there's not much point in having a fancy road from Derry to border Auchnacloy and then having strict border controls, which are going to act as a burden or an impediment to everybody using the route. So it's important, therefore, that we try to ensure that any developments that take place in terms of changes, and ultimately if there is a withdrawal from the European Union, there are policing and security issues in terms of the border between our respective jurisdictions. I think we have made remarkable progress on all counts. Just compare the border now to November 1985. Tens of thousands of people cross it daily and seamlessly to get to and from work. Tourists travel just as easily, helping to support not only our economies but indeed our societies. And trade flows from one side to the other, oftentimes as if the border wasn't even there. So my concern is that a withdrawal of the UK from the European Union would reverse all of that. It may well mean that border controls may be reimposed in some form, light or heavy otherwise. Will trade and tourism, let alone the daily commute of thousands of workers, be adversely affected? Would secondary border control ensure that roads in the area are blocked off yet again, as they have been in the past, albeit for various other reasons? And I hope the answer to all these questions is a firm no. I can assure you that that will be the basis for our approach to any arrangements which will have to be put in place should the UK decide to leave. But the reality is, you know, we're not really sure, and we can't say with any certainty what would happen in these circumstances. There would be, we're talking about an at-best situation where the waters are firmly uncharted. Much would depend on the terms of a British departure, and those terms, you know, will be difficult, will be complex, and will be complicated to negotiate. Any special European Union exit deal that the UK might strike would, in accordance with the treaties, be subject to a vote in the European Union. And this vote, of course, would take place without the United Kingdom itself taking part or participating. The approval of the European Parliament would be required, adding yet another layer of, at best, complexity, at worst, uncertainty. Needless to say, the government in Dublin would do its utmost to mitigate any consequences in the event that the border became an EU, non-EU area. And I'm sure that all sides, as well as the authorities here, and indeed in London and in Dublin, would take a pragmatic and sensible approach in such a very difficult scenario. I just suspect that the situation of this particular border hasn't figured that highly in the thinking of many of those who strongly favour a British withdrawal from the Union. This was probably not a prime consideration of theirs, and it's probably lower down the list in the minds of those who dream about a post-Brexit Britain. But it certainly is in our minds, both northern and southern, because it should be. And we need to be really wary of anything that has the potential, be it inadvertent or otherwise, to undo the progress that has been achieved over the past 30 years. And it's hard to see how the hardening of the border could in any way be of benefit to communities across the island. The impact of Brexit on our economies is an even greater uncertainty. And while we might hope that a solution could somehow be found for border issues at some future date, you can take it from me, and I invite you to agree that there would be no quick fix in terms of the economic dimension. Our government continues to study the likely economic impacts, but the research so far does not paint a pretty picture. One study recently published by the Economic and Social Research Institute forecast a potential reduction in trade flows between Ireland and the UK of up to 20%. That same report warned of lower wages. It warned of higher prices. Another reason why our government is so concerned in this debate, and why, as Enda Kenny put it recently, speaking to the Confederation of British Industry, that this to us is a national strategic risk. And I'm not speaking in any way, First Minister, to intervene or unduly interfere, but I'm standing here as a position of stakeholder representing the sovereign government of one of the 28 states that forms at the European Union. So from our perspective, this is much more than a wait-and-see approach, because this is not just about the relationships on our islands or the British-Irish relationship, as important as both of these concerns continue to be. But it's also about livelihoods, it's about living standards, it's about jobs that, to my mind, are firmly on the line. I know that the risks to our economy are matched by other risks for Northern Ireland. That's much clearer from other research that has been carried out here. It's been forecast, for example, that GDP could decline by up to 3%, that €1 billion would be taken out of the economy here, which would be an extremely heavy price for the people of Northern Ireland to pay. So there are serious consequences too about the impact that Brexit would have here on the farming community, given the changes that would be involved here for farmers. For example, the withdrawal of support under the Common Agricultural Policy, which both Arlene and I would readily agree is of huge importance to the rural economy and, I suppose, more parochial to our respective constituents. Similarly, others ask how the economy can cope without the important structural funding that the European Union has provided, totalling €2.4 billion between 2007 and 2013 alone. The fact is that EU funding, whether in the form of the Common Agricultural Policy, the Peace Programme, the Fisheries Fund, regional programmes, hugely important across Northern Ireland. By one study, EU support accounted for 8.4% of GDP between 07 and 13. And the economy would struggle if it was suddenly shorn of that percentage level of contribution. I know that we certainly would. And I also know how much time, as Alistair and Arlene and others know, how much time we spent in the course of the recent negotiations, how much time we spent dealing with issues of finance and budgets and money, and how best we might collectively engage to ensure that the finances here in Northern Ireland are on a firm and stable footing. Brexit might also be bad news for foreign direct investment into Northern Ireland. The authorities have had some great success here in attracting industry. Opportunity even greater now in the context of the corporation tax reform. I believe that's hugely important in terms of the continuing economic development. Every time I go to the United States, I meet business people wondering about investment, eager to invest, anxious about investment, obviously asking me about certainty of a political nature in Belfast and otherwise, is this safe to invest? And I think if we look at the agreement forged last week, we can say certainly yes, because there is stability. There is certainty, which is what investors want. But if you're asking people to invest in a post-Brexit in Northern Ireland, I think the challenges there would be real and serious. Because I say from my own experience that foreign companies like Ireland, because of our highly educated English-speaking workforce, our access to the EU's single market, and these are fundamental traits that we both share, whether north or south. But if the United Kingdom votes to come out of the European Union, thereby hampering access to the single market, would the attractiveness of Northern Ireland for foreign direct investment be reduced? Again, I think these are questions that ultimately will be answered by the people of Northern Ireland. And I know Arlene will have her own perspective on these challenges. And I know we will listen to her carefully in that regard, because both our economies need each other, because both of our economies, indeed both of our societies, are so deeply intertwined. If one suffers, so will the other. What seems clear to me is that Brexit would be bad news for both of us. But the question is, just how do we measure how bad that might be or is going to be? It would be remiss of me as well, especially given the venue here, not to highlight the uncertainties that Brexit might create for the educational sector, both north and south. Membership of the European Union has been a huge boost for universities across Ireland. You know here the relationship between Queen's, Trinity College and UCD in terms of the Erasmus engagement and how important that is for our young students, our future opinion formers and leaders, north and south. It's fair to say that the European Union has been a huge boost. How, for example, could we deal with a situation where suddenly freedom of movement of students across Europe comes to an end? And I know from my own knowledge, indeed from my own daughter's engagement, many of her friends have transferred courses from universities, Northern Ireland to Dublin, and back again, aided oftentimes by Erasmus funding and that engagement. And I believe that's important as we acknowledge the broadening of the horizons that projects like Erasmus has served for many years. And it has afforded our centres of learning here with access to financial support through, for example, Horizon 2020 that we also mentioned on the margins of the recent talks, and how important this funding stream is for our young people. Our universities do deserve credit for ultimately making our workforces as competitive and as prized and as well educated as they are. And again, you know, I believe that this is an issue of some importance that needs to be aired in the context of the debate. And let me say that, you know, I'm merely scratching the surface in terms of my remarks this afternoon. But describing the impact of a Brexit on Ireland is so difficult because it's all so embracing and so all-encompassing. No exaggeration to say that every aspect of our economies, every aspect of our society could be adversely affected. And that is really what we're dealing with here this afternoon. The only question, as far as I'm concerned, is just how bad that adverse effect might be. Because I take it as a given that it would be bad news for everybody on the islands, and the evidence that I've seen suggests as much. Events like this today, though, are a crucial tool to improve our understanding of what's at stake. Northern Ireland would be uniquely affected by a withdrawal on the part of the UK on account of its history, on account of its geography. And this issue deserves unique attention in Belfast, in London, in Dublin, and in Brussels. And I have an opportunity to speak later about my own personal engagement as a practicing politician on the doorsteps, urging people to vote either way. That in itself is a debate of considerable challenge. And what about a situation where if the people of Northern Ireland vote one way and the people of Great Britain vote another way? These are issues, again, that people need to be appraised of in the context of the current debate. So anyway, listen, in spite of all that pessimism, I want to finish on a note of optimism. And my optimism stems from the fact that I believe that a deal can be struck that will secure the future of the United Kingdom firmly within the European Union. And while the focus of the debate has been so far, however limited that might have been, the focus has been the benefits or the detriment of the UK's membership of the European Union. I think the other side of that same coin is the benefit to the European Union of having the United Kingdom as a firm influencer and participant around the table rather than in another room with a different agenda. And I believe that it's important at a time when we reflect on political agreements and treaties that have been struck here in the past in Northern Ireland, involving Northern Ireland. I think it's appropriate to finish by remembering the words of another treaty, at the British-Irish Agreement of 1998. And indeed, in that text, which complemented the groundbreaking Good Friday Agreement, the British and Irish governments together committed to, and I quote, "to develop still further the unique relationship between their peoples and the close cooperation between their countries as partners within the European Union." And we still remain fundamentally committed, almost 18 years later, to that commitment, to that pledge. And that's why we will continue to do all we can to ensure that Ireland and Northern Ireland and the UK as a whole can continue to cooperate together as friends, as partners within the greater European Union. Thank you.